The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami on May 30th, 1992 in Freeport. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, Text 5.
The personality of Godhead says, many, many births, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Brahma Sanhita 533, we have information of many, many incarnations of the Lord. It is stated there,
Atyaitamachutamanadimanantarupam Adyam purana purusham navayovaram cha Vedeshudullavam adullavam atmabhaktau Govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami.
Translation. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, Krishna, who is the original person, absolute, infallible, without beginning, although expanded into unlimited forms. He is still the same original, the oldest, and the person always appearing as a fresh youth. Such eternal, blissful, all-knowing forms of the Lord are usually understood by the best Vedic scholars, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. End of translation. It is also stated in Brahma Sanhita 539,
Ramadimurtishukalani yamenatishtan nanavasadam akarot bhuvaneshu kintu Krishna swayam samabhavat paramapumanyo govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami.
Translation. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, Krishna, who is always situated in various incarnations, such as Rama, Narasimha, and many sub-incarnations as well, but who is the original personality of Godhead known as Krishna, and who incarnates personally also. In the Vedas also it is said that the Lord, although one without a second, manifests himself in innumerable forms. He is like the Vaidurya stone, which changes color yet remains one. All those multi-forms are understood by the pure unalloyed devotees, but not by a simple study of the Vedas. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto. Devotees like Arjuna are constant companions of the Lord, and whenever the Lord incarnates, the associate devotees also incarnate in order to serve the Lord in different capacities. Arjuna is one of these devotees, and in this verse it is understood that some millions of years ago, when Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivaswan, Arjuna, in a different capacity, was also present. But the difference between the Lord and Arjuna is that the Lord remembered the incident, whereas Arjuna could not remember. That is the difference between the part and parcel living entity and the Supreme Lord. Although Arjuna is addressed herein as the mighty hero who could subdue the enemies, he is unable to recall what had happened in his various past births. Therefore, a living entity, however great he may be in the material estimation, can never equal the Supreme Lord. The Lord, anyone who is a constant companion of the Lord is certainly a liberated person, but he cannot be equal to the Lord. The Lord is described in the Brahma Samhita as infallible, achuta, which means that he never forgets himself, even though he is in material contact. Therefore, the Lord and the living entity can never be equal in all respects, even if the living entity is as liberated as Arjuna. Although Arjuna is a devotee of the Lord, he sometimes forgets the nature of the Lord. But by the divine grace, the devotee can at once understand the infallible condition of the Lord. Whereas a non-devotee or a demon cannot understand this transcendental nature. Consequently, these descriptions in the Gita cannot be understood by demonic brains. Krishna remembered acts which were performed by him millions of years before. Hari Bol. But Arjuna could not. Despite the fact that both Krishna and Arjuna are eternal in nature, we may also know herein that a living entity forgets everything due to his change of body. That the Lord remembers because he does not change his Satchit Ananda body. He is a Dvaita, which means there is no distinction between his body and himself. Everything in relation to him is spirit, whereas the conditioned soul is different from his material body. And because the Lord's body and self are identical, his position is always different from that of the ordinary living entity. Even when he descends to the material platform, the demons cannot adjust themselves to this transcendental nature of the Lord, which the Lord himself explains in the following verse. Ajopi san adayatma bhutatma isharopi san papitin swam adishtaya sambhavami atma mayada. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. Translation of verse 5, the personality of God had said many, many births, both you and I have passed, I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So in this verse, with quite a long purport, many different, very confidential aspects of the Supreme Person have been revealed. Bhagavan's nature here, his confidential nature, is explained by Srila Prabhupada. In the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can see how the Lord has also come, and he knows who all his different devotees are, even in their previous pastimes. But they don't remember. The Lord Chaitanya is being worshipped. As we sing this evening prayer, Kiva Jayo Jaya Gora Chandra Arotika Soha. When Lord Chaitanya was being offered an arti for 21 hours by Advaita Gosai, at that time it was called the Mahaprakash. Lord Chaitanya revealed to different devotees who they were in previous birth. Rai Gupta came and then Lord Chaitanya blessed him, and all of a sudden Rai Gupta saw Lord Chaitanya was no longer Lord Chaitanya, but he became Ramachandra, and that Nityananda became Lakshman. He looked at himself and he saw that he was Hanuman. Then he was so shocked, he fainted too much. And when he came back to consciousness, again he was Mirai Gupta, and Lord Chaitanya was changed back to Lord Chaitanya. So the Lord Chaitanya knows what different devotees have done for many births. But he never forgets, but the devotees, they forget. So when Brihaspati wanted to join the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, he decided to take birth in Navadvip also. He took birth in Vidyanagara, and he set up there too. But by the influence of all the Mayavadis at that time in Navadvip, the Advaitavadis, he himself also became absorbed in Advaitavad, and he went to Jagannath Puri and started to preach Advaitavad there, until Lord Chaitanya came and saved him. So Lord Chaitanya knew, this is my devotee, Brihaspati came from Swarga, participated in my pastime, but somehow he's got over here in Jagannath Puri, so he delivered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Brihaspati took birth to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he went and he studied for 7 days under Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, listening to him when he was in Jagannath Puri. But at the end, then he very diplomatically was able to deliver Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who then became one of the chief devotees of Lord Chaitanya. This was a big shock to see, like, the head of the university of all the Advaitavadis in Jagannath Puri, all of a sudden dancing in the street, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. People were amazed to see them. So when these other devotees take appearance, they forget who they were in the previous birth, for the pastime. This is by the Yoga Maya, in their case, of course by Mahamaya in the case of the ordinary conditioned souls. The Lord Chaitanya, he doesn't forget. There's a famous story about the Brahmana who came visiting the house of Jagannath Mishra, worshipping his Gopal deity. It's a quite a well-known story how this one traveling mendicant Brahmana, he came to the house of Jagannath Mishra. Jagannath Mishra began to discuss with him Krishna Katha. And this Brahmana was very austere. He would live off the berries and fruits in the forest and offer to his deity. But he had a bet that he would not eat until he offered to his deity. So he wanted to make an offering of some fruits to the deity. But Jagannath Mishra said, please, since you're the guest in our house, every day you're eating fruits and berries, but when you come to our house, as our guest, you must offer some rice and dal and some nice offering to your deities. Shukta, Sakta, Churisat. So, he agreed, all right, and they arranged all the ingredients for being offered. So he personally prepared for his deity nice offering, and around 12 o'clock it was ready to be offered, and he put the plate before this Gopal deity, and he went into meditation. In meditation he was doing Ahvan. Ahayami Gopal, please come Gopal, Gopal come. Gopal come and accept this offering. So he opened his eyes, and there Lord Chaitanya, the little small child, like 3 years old, he's there, he started eating the offering. No! Oh no! Oh, you ruined the offering! And then Jagannath Mishra looked and saw that his baby Nimai was eating the child Nimai was eating the prasad, the boga. So the Brahmana thought, now the offering is spoiled. This boy has eaten it before I finished the offering. So Jagannath Mishra went and said, Nimai! And he went to get Nimai. Nimai saw his father and ran. Hid under here, ran over there, the father's trying to get him. You get it? Come here! He's running after. I'm going to teach you a lesson. What are you doing? Eating our guest, boga, before it's offered to his deity? But then the Brahmana saw that, oh, this beautiful little child is running, and his father's trying to catch him and give him a good thrashing or something. And so he ran and he said, grab Jagannath Mishra. No, please. Don't, he's an innocent child. He doesn't know anything about right and wrong. He didn't know. He just came and ate. It doesn't matter. He said, I'm used to fasting anyway. I'll just give me some flour, some, you know, fruits, and I'll offer to my deity. Doesn't matter. Don't, please don't harm this child. It's not his fault. So then, Jagannath Mishra, everyone was like, please, you must make an offering. You know, you are guests. How can we, you know, allow this to go on? If you don't take something, you must offer some nice offering. This fruits won't be enough. Fruits and roots won't be enough. So then, they insisted very much, so he agreed again, and he said, okay, I'll do it again. Then they all ran and cleaned up the kitchen and bought new vegetables, cleaned the pots again. So again, he prepared a whole new offering. But this time, the offering was ready about 6 o'clock in the evening. This time, he had took Lord Chaitanya away. The ladies asked, why you are eating? This time, the Lord Chaitanya was sleeping in one room on the side. So again he brought the offering out and he was again started his avan, requesting Gopal to come. Gopal, come, take this offering. Again he's out of nowhere, didn't think of where he came from. He opened his eyes, and there was Nimai eating the offering again. So no. And Jagannath Mishra couldn't believe it. Again, the second time. So this time he picked up a stick. Alright Nimai, now you had it. And then, you know, I was running after Nimai, Nimai running here and there, hiding underneath the table, under here, trying to get him. But again, that Brahman, he grabbed, jerking him, no, please, don't harm this child, it doesn't matter. This is all will of the Supreme, don't harm this child. So, Jagannath Mishra, he was very frustrated. He couldn't even feed his guest. He felt himself very unfortunate. In India, there's a saying from the Vedas, Atithi Narayana. You should serve our guests like Narayana. So, he was feeling, you know, he couldn't serve his guests properly. So for him, it was very disturbing. And, so this time, the Bhagavan is insisting, oh, you just give me some roots and things, no matter, I'll just offer. But just at that time, the eldest son of Jagannath Mishra came in the room. He was about 14 or so at the time, or 13. He was a very beautiful boy, very handsome, very effulgent, and when he came in the room, the Brahmana couldn't believe. He just was immediately attracted to him, to Vishwarup. Actually, Vishwarup is the incarnation of Sankarshan. So he's all attractive. He's also all attractive in nature. So that Brahmana is very attractive. He could say, who are the lucky parents of such a divine child? What qualities? And of course, this was also the son of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata. So, Vishwarup, when he heard everything that had happened, he came and with a very sweet voice, he addressed the Brahman and said, my dear Brahmana, we are very much blessed by you. We are attached householders here living in the material world. In this house, we are all living here together in our family. And you are a very renounced mendicant going from place to place, wandering and preaching and worshipping your deity and living in just some berries and things in the forest. You are very austere. So we are very blessed by your presence. So you are very austere, but we are very attached. So being very attached, you can see we're very attached to feeding you. We're very attached to giving you some nice offering. And if we don't have this opportunity to feed you nicely, then we are all feeling very upset. My parents, I see, they're completely forlorn. So you are being very renounced. For you it's nothing to fast like this one day. So we just humbly request that out of your extreme mercy and unparalleled good nature, you just kindly one more time just make offering and offer to your deity. You'll keep the child in the next house somewhere away from him. So he was so sweetly, nicely presented by Vishwarup that the Brahmana, he couldn't say no. He said, okay. Again, Jagannath Mishra was like this. He agreed. Should they all jump off, start cleaning the kitchen, wash the pots one more time, bring more rice, more vegetables, more ghee and everything. So again, the Brahmana started cooking. This time he finished around midnight. So when he started cooking, they took Nimai to the next house. And the Brahmin lady said, you being a Brahmin boy, why are you stealing from this, taking this priest's offering? And he said, what do you mean? I'm a cowherd boy. It's all right for a cowherd boy to take Brahmin's offering. They said, what do you mean, Brahmin boy? I mean, a cowherd boy. They couldn't understand. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. He knew that, but they didn't understand what his statement really meant. So, this time when the Brahmin finally finished his offering, the cooking, he looked around. Nobody was there. Completely quiet. Everybody had gone to sleep. He took the offering nicely before his Gopal deity. And again, he went into his deep meditation and trance. And he prayed, Gopal, please come and take this offering. While he was meditating, he opened his eyes. And there was Lord Chaitanya again eating the offering. And the Lord Chaitanya said, why? Why are you so upset? You keep calling me, I keep coming. The Lord said, but I'm calling Gopal. And then he said, who do you think I am? And then he changed his form, and there he was standing, Murali Varana, playing his flute, threefold, tribhanging, bending, threefold, bending form. And the Brahmana was astonished. There was his worshipable deity, his Ishta Devata. He'd been worshipping his whole life, and now he was seeing face to face Gopal. So he paid his obeisances again and again, and offered again, and he couldn't believe it, how blessed he was to see Gopal. Then after he became calm, after some time, then Krishna spoke to him, that you come to me in every birth. That's why he focused on because of this birth. You come to me in every birth. When I was in the house of Mother Yasoda, you came there also and did a similar pastime. When I was in Ramchandra, you came at that time also and you did the same thing. See, whenever Krishna comes, nobody, his parents never think he's God. That idea doesn't come until much later, if at all. But in Lord Chaitanya, he was very secret. In other pastimes also, some people knew that it wasn't publicized like that. For the parents, they don't think like that. They think he's just a child. So this Brahmana was coming every time the Lord appeared like that in his human-like form and had his whole childhood pastime. He would come and do this similar kind of offering, and the Lord would take his offering. So Lord Chaitanya revealed this to him. Krishna, in his form as Krishna, was speaking. You come in every pastime. So now again, you came in this pastime. And now I've come in the world to give their mercy to these conditions so that they can get love of Krishna. But I've come now as a devotee, so you cannot reveal this to anybody. If you don't reveal anybody, you can stay here in Navadvip, you can watch the pastimes unfold, everything. But if you tell anybody, before I leave the world, what happened, who I am, then I may have to remove you from this world early. So then Lord Krishna blessed his devotee, he changed his form back again to the Chaitanya child form. And then he went back into his room and went to take his rest. So the Brahmana, he was so ecstatic. I mean, you know, his hairs were standing on end. He was so blissful how the Lord had just revealed himself to how actually the offering was personally accepted by the Lord. So in his ecstasy, he just started taking that prasadam that had been touched by the Lord himself. He started rubbing it on his arms and his head. Haribo! 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 So when he was screaming, all the people in the house, they woke up and they came out. And they're looking and he's rubbing the dal and rice on his arm and he's like, Haribo! I said, boy, he must have been really hungry. You know? And they all look at him and he looks around and sees everybody and he can't tell them what happened because, you know, that was the thing, he can't tell. He started eating his prasadam and everybody saw how now he's eating. They're all very satisfied. Atithi seva hagala. Our guest has been served. And Jagannath missing everyone, they went back and took this. So Lord Krishna, he knew every pastime, every birth that this devotee was taking, but this devotee couldn't remember. And this is the nature, you see, we have some service, some eternal relationship with the Lord, and the devotee may even take birth many times serving the Lord directly, won't remember. So we can't put the Krishna and the devotee on the same level at all. Never can they be equal. See, the Mayavadis, they say that God and the devotee become one. They're the same. But the Vaishnavas say they're not different. The same quality is there, Satchidananda. But the devotee is very small. He's always dependent on the Lord. The Lord is very great. He's always independent. This is the difference between the devotee and the Lord. So that the Lord is worthy of giving us shelter. We take shelter of the Lord, rendering Him devotional service. And these verses in the Bhagavad Gita are important for us to come to the conclusion, to come to the very clear understanding about the transcendental nature of Krishna. It's just like when I was coming from the JFK this morning, there was some big sign. Some insurance company, it said, solid like a rock, something like that, prudential. There was a big rock at Gibraltar. So you thought, here's the propaganda, the insurance company is trying to make their customers feel like you're very solid, I could put my money in there. Life insurance scheme, and they're so solid. I can depend on this company, solid like Iraq. Of course, you don't know, maybe they're going bankrupt or not, but that's the propaganda they're doing, the publicity, the PR. But ideas like that, people want to put their confidence in something very solid. So when we're going to surrender to Krishna, then we have to be very sure that Krishna is the absolute truth. Like in India, you find, sometimes you find in people's puja room, they have Krishna, they have Ram, they have Durga, they have Kali, they have Saraswati, they have Lakshmi, they have got this Baba and that Baba, and they have so many, you know. And then you say, well, why is it you're putting so many? They say, we don't know who the Supreme is, so some of them, you know, this way it's like somebody must be there, a right one, so we can't lose, you know. But that way, you see, it's not actually the most effective way, because we can never fix our mind properly. So Krishna, he's clarifying here in the Gita very clearly. You take shelter of me. Mamekam saranam bhaja. You take shelter of me, I'll protect you. You see. So in our puja rooms, we put Krishna in the top. He's the origin, he is the Govindam Adi Purusham tamaham bhaja. And then other expansions and other devotees. Vishnu Tattva can be on the same level, like Rama and Vishnu, Narayana. And other devas like Shiva and Brahma and Indra and Vayu and so on. They're on the lower level. They're under the shelter of Krishna. They're his like ministers in government. So devotees are very clear how everything is related. And they take the full shelter of Krishna so they don't have any confusion. And this way, so when we know very clearly who is the Supreme, then we can take shelter of Krishna directly. We can be more protected. We can be more clear in our own devotional service. And this will bring us to the desired end very quickly. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught that people should take shelter of Krishna. His teaching was Akila Ishar Krishna Arsava Bhittam. That Krishna is the only Supreme Lord and others are His servitors. Everyone else is serving Krishna. But Krishna is Supreme. Ekaha Kuru Nandana. When we are completely fixed on Krishna, then Krishna gives us also complete protection. He said, Jejata Mantra Padjante Tansa Daiva Vajanya. According to how you approach me, I will reciprocate with you. It's like who was the devotee, the one we see? He didn't know who a Supreme was, so when he was praying, he just said, Ishwara, Lord. In his mind, he didn't know whether Brahma, Shiva, or Vishnu. So because he was confused in his own mind, the three appeared to him at the same time, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. So then they became the Dattatreya, the three in one. He didn't know who was the Supreme, so he was just saying, you know, like, Lord, meaning, he's thinking in his mind, maybe Brahma, whoever the Supreme, he should show up. But because he was vague in his mind, all the three came. So this gets to be the problem. When we don't know who the Supreme is, then it's like if you address a letter, and you give address, you know, New York, no street address, no postal code, it's become difficult to reach the exact spot. So you may say New York State or USA. So the more clear you give the address, you're sure it gets to the right spot. That's why now they give you zip code, special, all kinds of codes, so it gets right to the destination. So also in the Vedas, Om. Omkara means this is giving the address to the Param Brahma, Absolute Truth. Omkara means Absolute Truth, so that's the first address. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm offering this to Bhagavate, I'm offering this to Bhagavan, to the Supreme Lord. Who? Which Supreme Lord? Vasudevaya. Who is the son of Vasudeva? That means Krishna. So see, address is complete. We want to give the complete address so that our devotion will go right to that place where it's intended. And it gets the maximum benefit. When Krishna says, I will reciprocate with you, if we give our full devotion to Him, He gives us full protection. Name bhakta pranashati. But if we give a general devotion, then He may also reciprocate also in that way. So this is not so beneficial for us. So Krishna is clearly telling Arjuna to clear all the doubts why Arjuna should take shelter in Krishna. So we should also know from this. When that Lord Chaitanya was in the mother Sachi's womb, when he was in the womb of Mother Sachi, then the devas from heavenly planets, from Swarga, they came to see Lord Chaitanya to offer him prayers. And they prayed to him. Could you come in every millennium in a different avatar's form? You come as Brahma, as Matsya, as Kurma, come as Narsingadev, Rama, Krishna, Kalki. Each of these avatars, all the Vishnu avatars, you give moksha to your devotees. Only Vishnu can give mukti. Not Shiva, not Durga, none of the others can give. Only Vishnu. So the devas is saying, you give mukti. And your incarnation, other previous incarnation, a Vishnu. But in this incarnation, we understand you're going to give bhakti. Bhakti is better than mukti. Like room here, funny room, come in. You're going to give your pure love. See, giving liberation is easy. It's like, say somebody's in the prison house, freeing it from the prison. That's easier than if you free it from the prison and you adopt him as your child. Or you give him a job in your house and accept him as one of your intimate own people or one of your family members, something like that. That's a completely different level of freedom. So getting liberation just means freedom from birth and death. But that doesn't mean that Krishna is further obliged. He gives liberation and his duty is finished. But when he gives bhakti, when he gives love, love is a continuing relationship. It's a dinati pratigrinati. It's a giving and a reciprocation. It's like the small child gives love to the parents give affection to the child, and there's a relationship grows and grows. So the nature of devotion is this is a continuous, very deep relationship which grows. So that Krishna doesn't give. Krishna is the only one who gave that. And that was given very rarely. Matsya and Kurma and others, they don't give. They give liberation. But Krishna, he gave also bhakti, but only to those who completely surrendered to Him. But these devas, these visitors from other planetary systems, came to see Lord Chaitanya when he was in the womb of his mother. We discussed last night in Rio, they were very interested in extraterrestrials. So we discussed about all the different extraterrestrials that came to visit Lord Chaitanya when he was a child. It's quite a history. I don't know if people in Freeport are interested in those things. There's a lot of flying saucers in South America, so they're interested. But these were some extraterrestrials who came here from the higher planetary systems of Swargaloka. And they were praying to Lord Chaitanya before he took birth, when he was in the womb of his mother, that this time when you take birth, we want to join in your Sankirtan movement. We want to be blessed by you because you're giving love of this rare love, prema, was never given before so freely as how you are going to give it and the way you're going to give it. So we want to get this mercy from you. So we're your devotees, but because we're in the higher planetary systems there, it's not so rough as it is here on the earth. We have a very good life there. We don't have any need for material blessing. We're not asking you to give us anything material. We got so much sense gratification, so much material facility for enjoying. It's not needed. You don't need any more material benediction. Rather, we just have two problems. We only have the problem of that occasionally the demons attack us and we have to defend ourselves. Another problem is that because there's so much material facility to enjoy, we forget our spiritual nature. And we get absorbed in the bodily consciousness, and we just think that this physical sensations are the all there is to life. And we forget the real transcendental joy and ecstasy of serving. And this is the greatest suffering. To just be in some superficial pleasure to the point where you forget your actual real spiritual profound ecstasy, that is the worst distraction of all. So now, because you're appearing to deliver all the fallen souls, you're going to deliver everyone. Please, will we be the only ones to miss out? You'll deliver here all the human beings, and we on the higher planetary systems, we won't get your mercy? Please don't forget us. Please give us your mercy also. So the higher planetary systems, they could see that the Lord was coming in many different births. And each birth, he was transcendental, but each appearance or avatar incarnation of Godhead has its own particular nature, nomenclature, and they could see that difference. So they wanted to take advantage of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He's the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. So the devotees, they serve the Lord birth after birth, and the Lord takes birth many times also, but his birth, his appearance, is out of his own potency, as was explained in the next verse. I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates. I am the Lord of all living entities. Still, I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. He comes down from the spiritual world, far beyond this material world, just to come here to enlighten us. He's not coming here like we are because he's got some material purpose to do. He's only coming because he wants to deliver from this material world and give them his mercy. Sometimes in this material world we get infatuated with the things of the material world and we think that this is everything. We become very proud of our situation or very enwrapped in the whole thing. You probably heard about the richest frog in the world. See, one time in India there was a small lake which is very beautiful, scenic lake, had many lotus flowers, like here you see this lotus flower on the picture. There were many frogs living in that lake. But on one side of the lake there was a ghat, a bathing area. And every morning the king's elephant would come and take his bath in the lake. His mahout, his attendants would bathe him. So one of the very intelligent frogs of that lake, in the morning, he started to wander about on the shore. And he found a half a rupee right there on the ground. Someone had left it. So he went and he sat on top of it. And he started to contemplate that I've got more money than any other frog in the whole world. I mean, what frog has even a cent to its name? What to speak of a half a rupee? Of course, in those days, a half a rupee was much more than it is today. So, but he started to contemplate, you know, now that I'm the richest frog in the world, I have to live up to my newfound position. So what do I have to do? I have to do something. I can't just sit here and do nothing, right? Being so rich. So he said, I have to think about not just myself, what about the other frogs?
What about their condition? What about the economic inequalities that exist in society? What about the prejudice? What about frogness, frog rights? We have to see for the frog rights in the world. Let the frogs live peacefully. Victory for the frog! Victory for the frog! Jindabad! Other frogs started to gather around, and he started to tell them, yes, now we're going to have a new agenda.
Who's this pond in Bengal?
Huh?
Who's this pond in Bengal?
Yeah, Bengal.
I understand. No. No, very down to it.
So we're going. We have to end the inequalities against the frogs, the prejudice. And the first thing is, this elephant cannot come anymore in our pond. He comes and he bathes around and blows with his trunk and makes waves. I mean, what does he think he is? What about the poor frogs? We get just scattered like nothing. So I, the richest frog in the world, hereby ordain no more elephants. Forbidden. Elephant came with his attendant. And so he's coming, and the frog, he didn't know whether to leave his coin or stay there, because if he left the coin, you know, they might lose his whole position, because that was just kind of claim the thing. So here the elephant is coming. So first he tried coughing out, you know, all elephant, all elephant. But the elephant wasn't paying any attention. You know, what's this, you know, some frog kind of aside and making a difference for him. So the frog was getting really, you know, other frogs were going to look at what you're doing, nothing's happening, you know, and he's, I got to do something. So then he's, you know, stop, stop. He jumped up and leaped on the leg of the elephant. You know, with the elephant, you got to goad him with a big, you know, iron point before he even feels it, you know. A little frog bouncing off his leg could be like, you know, throwing a lotus petal at someone, and, you know, didn't feel anything. The next thing you knew, the frog bounced off the elephant's leg, and the elephant, without even knowing it, just squished the frog. That was the end of the richest frog in the world. True story. So that story was told by His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur 100 years ago. Names have been changed. But I'll tell you, this is the thing. We get like that frog, you know. Sometimes we find people that get all worked up. They get all, they think, you know, I'm going to change the whole world. Everything's going to change. They come in, they think that by their own power, by their own little intelligence, or fandom, that somebody's going to change everything. In the end, they just get spluttered by time. They get spluttered by the overwhelming force of the material energy, which just doesn't respond to their own desires. It's far beyond their control. Krishna is the all-powerful. If we are in touch with Krishna, He can change everything. He has the power to change everything. But any others in this material world, their power is all limited by various things and laws. Even there are very great, great personalities in the past, but nowadays, very rare to find such a powerful people who are able to change things very drastically. Even those who change it just for like a short time and then everything reverses. Those who are actually able to make a long-lasting changes are those who have done so by being in touch with the Supreme Personality of God. Like, who are the people that are the most famous in the world? Are even the great religious teachers, like Jesus Christ, or Hazrat Muhammad, even Krishna, I mean Arjuna, all these great disciples. Is the persons that have taken shelter of the Supreme Lord have been able to change the lives of people, change the destiny of the world. So we have to avoid getting into the syndrome of this richest frog in the world thing, where we get a little bit of education, a little bit of power, a little bit of some, maybe someone becomes a famous sports person or movie star, so they want to change everything, but then they, ultimately they're only able to do a very small amount. And in the end they get swept away. But if we use whatever we have in the service of Krishna, if we actually get in touch with Krishna, that's where you can actually move mountains. That's where you can change. the future of the world, you can change people. Like Prabhupada said years ago to the devotees, that there could well be a world war between Russia and America, the way things are headed. But if you preach in Russia, everything can change all of a sudden. It completely can change. So the devotees took that up, and there were like 10,000 devotees preaching in Russia, and 30 of them were in prison, but they were distributing books in the government printing presses in the night time. They were printing Bhagavad Gita and Armenian and Latvian and all these different languages. And the devotees are getting caught and arrested. Going on underground, massive underground movement. The one point that Before Andropov. Or maybe it's Andropov, one of the two. He announced that the biggest danger, he said that the two number one enemies to the Soviet thing, the biggest influences in their society, he said, were the Hare Krishna movement and rock and roll. rock and roll is, there's the voice of America and British, everyone's got their little, where was the Hare Krishna movement? Why did he say it's like the number one or number one enemy? And nobody could even see them. Where were they? But they were there, and they knew they were there. They knew that they were changing the whole fiber of the society, the outlook of the people. But even if you told the devotees, whole Russia is going to change, the whole world, nobody could have believed it, right? But now it's like completely changed, completely different. The whole system was turned, Nobody can really see why. For us, we know the reason why. It was because the karma of that country was changed because millions of people were getting Prabhupada's books, they were hearing the mantra, the whole karma of that subcontinent was changed. As the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we can actually see that the whole world can be changed if we take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that every town and village of the whole world would be engaged and chanting his holy name. He told that he wanted to inundate the entire world with love. Completely everyone be flooded with love of Krishna. If we love the original person, everyone's a part of him, we love everyone. That's what's missing in the society today with the big race riots and all kinds of problems. People are not coming up to the real root of the problem. Is that the education in the world today is all bodily centered. We're all being taught that we're this body. People are being trained, you're white, you're black, you're American, you're Russian, you're Chinese, you're Indian, you're this, you're that. Nobody is being trained. You're the internal living force in the body. These bodies are superficial. The real self is the living force. This is eternal. Sometimes you may be born in this color body or that color by this nation or that nation, but the living force is your real identity. And the living force is a part of the supreme spiritual origin of all forces, the supreme Shaktiman. If this basic education was given, we can come to a world without prejudice, without hatred amongst races, without all this type of misunderstanding. But as long as people are trained, you're the body, and then you're this nation. So we have United Nations. But there's always fighting going on between the nations. Which border, which rights will be there. So this way, it started off with 72 nations when they started off in, 46 or something? And now there's 152 or so nations. I don't know, it's adding every day, maybe up to 155 already, or more. So Prabhupada says it's not uniting nations, it's dividing nations. It's not uniting the world. Just by politics, we can't unite the world. We can unite the world by love. And that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving, a real substantial spiritual love. So this is this verse that explains to us how the Lord is transcendental to this material world. So since he's transcendental to the material world, that we can put our complete dependence on him. The material world may change, things may come and go, but he remains solid. In India, people generally like to get a job in the government because it's considered very, you never get fired. even if you don't do much work, you can just kind of somehow pull on. There's a lot of pension and other. So I think if you work for the government, that's like very secure. But I was in some country in South America, and the government doesn't have any money. They can't pay the people. They say, work for the guy, they say they're behind 6 months. They don't have money to pay the people. They're broke. So it's a, you know, very crazy situation. They're working for government, but they don't, the government has no money. So they don't, you know, they go like, then they go on strike, and what can the government do? It's a crazy situation. So people are looking for this kind of security, but where to find it? So the real security is actually when we understand that Krishna is transcendental, his government, his transcendental situation is achyuta, infallible. It never deteriorates. It never changes. So if we take shelter in Krishna, then we're in a most solid position. Also, sometimes the Lord sends his devotee here to see how his divine grace through the A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada was sent to this material world in order to give us the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Western countries. This was also predicted in the Chaitanya Mangal that Lord Chaitanya would send commanding devotee, leading devotee to spread the message in the countries where people were more materially entangled, in distant countries far away from India. Lord Chaitanya personally preached in India. He sent the leading devotee to the other countries to save the people who were lost in material mode. So Prabhupada came first here to New York and established the first center 25 years ago, 26 years ago, established ISKCON 25 years ago. And therefore, of course, New York is like a type of a Tirtha, because this was where Prabhupada first started the movement. And, you know, the Big Apple, he offered it to Krishna. Unfortunately, we've not been able to fully continue the preparation of that offering. But was that Prabhupada made a beachhead, you can say, here, and it started from here spreading all over the rest of the world. So he was sent by Lord Chaitanya to give us this special mercy. And although it seems overwhelming and mind-boggling how things can change, at the same time, things have to change, because just like we went through the situation in America with Los Angeles and a little bit in New York and then a few other places in Chicago, with the big race riots and everything after the recent Rodney King decision, it showed that how fragile the whole society was, how violence was so easily able to erupt and create the mass suffering on people. I wonder if it would be like, instead of just a drop of a hat, people like burst out dancing in the street and big kirtans and embracing each other in ecstasy. And this is what was happening in Lord Chaitanya's presence, that when Lord Chaitanya went into the jungle and started chanting Hare Krishna, all these ferocious animals, lions and tigers, and elephants and pythons and, you know, innocent like deers, and they all of a sudden became so overwhelmed by his chanting. They became so filled with a loving sentiment that they started to actually embrace each other. They even started to, you know, smell each other's noses and everything, like a lion and a tiger sniffing each other's noses, you know, practically kissing each other, you know, and embracing and rolling in the ground, and the whole scene of just completely overwhelmed in love. The people that were with Lord Chaitanya, they couldn't believe it. The whole jungle, which is, you know, I was just preaching in southern Bangladesh, and we had a program in Harinagar, which is in, just at the border of the Sundarbans. And just 4 kilometers from our program, one person didn't come to the program in the night. He thought he would take advantage of everybody being in the program here. We had 30,000 people that are listening to our kirtan and everything in Bangladesh. We had about 15, 20 devotees from all over the world, and Krishna kirtan and a whole, you know, group. So there's 30,000 people there. There's one person who thought, well, no, everybody else in the program, I can go in the forest and get the honey. In the Sundarbans, there's so many big honey shops. So they go in the forest to get the honey. So that this is my chance. And, no, I have no competition. So he goes in the forest, but he got eaten by a tiger. So like the tigers are Then I got, you know, they told me all the people there that seen tigers, they gave me all the tiger cuts with it. A tiger in Bengal is something like from the head to the tip of the tail is more than 15 feet long. The Royal Bengal tiger. You know, weighs like almost, I don't know, half a ton or a ton or something. It's like huge. But it says that in the forest, they can like make it like a cat, how it sits. They can just sit, you know, real, like small. It just sits in the shadow and it's all these like bamboo leaves and it's got the stripes. You can't see it. And it's just waiting. And when these boatmen go by in these little creeks to go through the jungle looking for the honeybees or the honey, where the bees are with the flashlights, you know, the tigers will always have to it's like a long game. Just grabs behind the neck, takes the home, gives the kid. So normally a tiger, and I mean these are like, you know, very ferocious situation in the jungle, and even these tigers, they could become completely overwhelmed with love, and everyone could be, all the animals could be overwhelmed with love. But the Prabhupada said, we're just trying to do this inconceivable thing with jungle animals, you know, we can't do that. But if we can leave, get a little bit of this loving mercy of Lord Chaitanya to the human being, and get them to chant in ecstasy. That would be great. That should be our duty. So now here, like in Europe, they're doing this, they're taking a band around and they chant the whole night Hare Krishna with electronically amplified madrangas, two guitars with, you know, drums and kartals and everything, and they do a whole kirtan. And they get 5,000, 6,000 kids to come in the big auditorium to dance the whole night, Hare Krishna. Amplified. The idea is by transcendental vibration, this theory there, this idea that I'm a spirit soul, we can realize it much easier. Because we're getting a happiness that's not dependent on the body. It's a happiness that's not dependent on, normally we get happiness when somebody takes drugs, or if they drink, or if they have some, you know, physical experience, you want a roller coaster or something. There's some obvious physical cause for their pleasure. But the amount of happiness people get when they're chanting Hare Krishna and dancing, the inner peace that they're feeling, the deep spiritual bliss that they get, doesn't equate with just, you know, if they were just jumping up and down on a disco, they wouldn't get that much happiness. But they get so much happiness chanting Hare Krishna. And then they start to realize that there's a whole other dimension to existence which they've just been oblivious to. They haven't realized. So this chanting has to open the door to the mystery of life in a way that nothing else can. People now are not ready to go off, and you could also do it if you were in the Himalayas and meditated for a few lifetimes in a cave. You know, but who's going to do that? Nobody can do it nowadays. Neither there's any caves left. They cut all the trees down there for paper, building dams and things. And they got the tourists, the helicopters going over, you know, to show people here's Mount Everest, and here's where the abominable snowman is. So even the yogis want to meditate, but got all the tourists going. It's Kali Yuga. It's not like what it used to be. No peace anywhere in the world externally, but you can get actual peace by chanting Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And I could go on, but maybe I'll open up for questions, and then I can, Krishna inspires me to say anything in response to the question. Any questions? Lord Chaitanya said that this is Vajra. This is the external.
But at least it's a fast starting step.
And there's so many steps. But the point is that Lord Chaitanya wanted to get to what is the essence. Svadharma, doing Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, surrender to Krishna, all these things were not accepted as Krishna has completed himself. When he got to the point that actually hearing from a pure devotee the glories of Krishna, then he said, Ihahoy. This is fully spiritual. Just to open our minds to hear about the glories of Krishna, how Krishna is completely transcendental for this material world. when the world traded, maintained, and destroyed, Krishna is always there. He never is affected by all these changes. And then the qualities of Krishna, his beauty, his greatness, his kindness, how he came here, how he interacted with his devotees, in such a beautiful way, how he came as Lord Chaitanya. But the rasa, the mellow, the ecstasy, the love between the Lord and his devotees is so wonderful. So this hearing about these things are very important for awakening people. Now people are dormant. In the previous yuga, society was very well organized. The duties of the different varnas and ashram was very well arranged. Nowhere in New York, where is varnashram? What do you mean when you say swadharma? Then you say the swadharma of the hell's angels or the swadharma of which people, which gang has their swadharma? You have to kill someone to become a member of the gang. Why, you know, it's like the concept of swadharma is far beyond, they don't have any idea what is the, that's for someone who's already living in a varnashram. The varnashram today is very much shattered by Kali. So basically we need to reestablish a type of daiva varnashram. When people become spiritually awakened, then we can organize them into their own duty as a devotee, and according to the ashramas, as a student, as married, as retired, or renowned. According to their nature, then they can do their swadharma as they, according to their nature, according to what their occupation. So, but this is a long-term program. So, all of a sudden, we want to establish this. But to do that, the first thing is the people have to be spiritually awakened. Unless the people are, the whole purpose of varnashram, whole purpose of swadharma, as you mentioned, is to awaken, is that they should have Vishnu bhakti. The purpose is to please Vishnu, to please the Supreme Lord. But the people don't even believe in the Supreme Lord. They don't have any desire to please Him to begin with. So if you have them already accept by Krishna consciousness to please the Lord, then automatically people will want to know what is the proper way of organizing society, what are the orders of life, what are the duties of each type of occupation. Then things can be very easily organized. We're taking it from the different angle. In the Vedic time, it went from varnashram up to Vishnu bhakti. And now since varnashram is no longer, at least in the rest of the world, maybe there's some remnants in India and Bangladesh and a few places, but they're hardly very much accurate anymore. But some remnants are there. For the rest of the world, there's nothing at all. So people need first to be now Krishna conscious. You need God conscious. And then if they're Krishna conscious, then automatically you can establish what is a varnashram in a spiritual sense. Not in a, just like you see, say someone's born in a Brahmin family. So they're saying they're jati to Brahmin. But they may not be acting as a Brahmin. They may be eating meat or they may be doing any occupation. But they're called jati Brahmin because they're born in a Brahmin family. So this is the perverted nature of varnashram. But in the Vedas it says that according to what a person is doing, you should know whether he's a Brahmin or Kshatriya or Vaishya or Sudra by his quality of action, not simply by his birth. In Gita, Krishna says, guna karma vivajasa, by quality and by work. In any case, you have this Jati Brahmin. The other person you have, say someone is initiated by Guru and he's given a Brahmin initiation, he's trained, so he becomes Paramarthic Brahmin. He becomes a spiritual Brahmin. By initiation. So the spiritual Brahman is today more important, more effective than the Jati Brahman, who is not doing his swadharma. So the Jati Dharma becomes the Paramarthic Brahman. In this age, it becomes very nice. But the real important point is to have a Paramarthic or spiritual Brahman, spiritual, who will have worked for the welfare of others. So then you can paint people very easily about their duties. Once they accept that they have a duty, to become spiritually awakened. Until you reach that point, then everything else is too degenerated. It's not practical right now.
This is the other question. The devotees also, we do like work for our living or whatever. Now, maybe we have most of the time are compelled to do. We do not know what doing is really our sadharma or what we intend to do or we are, what we are supposed to do. We are, compelled to do that from living, or whatever. That's the intention of asking that question.
No, so as a devotee, our sadharma is to serve Krishna. We should serve Krishna. So, according to whether if you're someone is a householder, he's working, he's maintaining his family, so his sadharma, he has to maintain family, at the same time he has to go on serving Krishna. He has to give some help to the temple. He should help other people to become Krishna conscious as far as possible. He should help his family to be Krishna conscious. Wife should help husband and children to be Krishna conscious. Like this, there should be side by side, material and spiritual, both should be going on. It's like two tracks for the train. We cannot go in the sort of monorail. It's a two-track system. But they're both going parallel. So we have to use the material and the spiritual side by side. Then we can properly progress. And this is for those who are having just a job, they are compelled because they have the financial needs. If somebody is sitting like a monk or, Brahmin is doing pujas and something is much of a simple existence, he doesn't have to worry about all these things. But there's a very small, infinitesimal percentage of the people can live like that at the present time. So most people, they're working to maintain themselves, their families. So then they have this duty that from all their work, they should be engaging that energy in Krishna's service so they can get their spiritual force. It's like a cycle. Like now there's a recycling, ecological. It's a recycle that will increase the water of saving from there. In a spiritual sense, we have to recycle all the energy we get from Krishna. We give it back. And we get it back. So this creates a kind of a spiritual syndrome which elevates us. And if we take from Krishna and don't give back, then we're stealing from it. And so then that's against our swadharma. So our spiritual swadharma is if we're giving so many facilities in Krishna, we give back to Krishna according to our guidance of our guru, according to our own situation. We maintain ourselves at the same time we do service with our mind, with our body, with our words, with our possessions to Krishna. This way you can be purified. You can remain spiritually conscious. You can be protected from the reactions to the karma. Otherwise, whatever we do materially, we get wrapped up in the karma. Chain and effect, chain and reaction, or chain and action and reaction. But if you're doing for Krishna, then there's no.
Not to mind very much about the occupational part. Not to mind very much
as long as it's not something, very harmful, like working in a slaughterhouse.
Without that, not to worry about that, but not to mind much about occupational part.
That's not so essential as what we do with our time and with our energy. What's the occupation? It's like kind of a converter. You're converting your energy into money. You're working and you're getting paid for the work, and with that money you're buying this and that and paying your bills. So some people, they're doing some work, say they're artists or they're musicians, they can do a painting for Krishna, they can sing a song for Krishna. So maybe somebody's working as an accountant, and he can really do some accounts for Krishna. Many people, they're just working, maybe doing business, they're making money, so they can use some of the money for Krishna. And that's in the same way as artists doing something for Krishna, they're getting some of the good coming to Krishna. But also as a way of recycling their energy with Krishna and keeping the link, keeping that their work is also connected to Krishna. Say they give even 1% or 10% to Krishna. They give 1%. So that is also like a shareholder in their enterprise. In fact, I was in South India recently, and one gentleman, he told me, yes, he was very proud. He said, Krishna is one of our directors. He's on our board of directors. So we put him on the board of directors officially, and every year from the dividend, we give a percentage, and we go every year and we give it the dividend and the hundi of the Balaji temple too, but he's officially on the board of directors, he's a shareholder.
Very adult.
The business is first?
Good business.
So there are some people, they like some aspects of Krishna consciousness, but they still go on doing the forbidden activities. And they wonder, why I'm not getting a taste for devotional service? Why I'm not getting a taste for the chanting? Why am I still being disturbed by the material nature? We need to take the shelter of Krishna. But that means sometimes we have to give up the bad habit. But there are some people under the modes of nature. They want to go on doing bad activities, like the boy wanted to go on chewing the tobacco. Yet they'll still do a little Krishna consciousness. So for them, the effect is very slow, very negligible sometimes. So some people say we should depend fully on Krishna. We don't need to do anything, we just depend on Gaur Nitya's mercy. And some people they're saying we have to do the sadhana. According to our sadhana, Krishna will bless us. We don't need any special mercy, we just need to do our sadhana. According to what we do, Krishna will give us the blessing accordingly. So this is like baby kitten philosophy and baby monkey philosophy. You understand? What is the baby kitten philosophy? You know? What is the baby kitten philosophy? Huh? Right. The cat carries the kitten by the back of the neck. Then what does the kitten do? It just hangs there. Doesn't do anything. So that's the philosophy that we don't need to do anything, Krishna will bless us. Some of the Christian evangelists, they say like that. Just accept Jesus and that's all you need to do. Then a monkey, baby monkey, holds on to the mother. Mother doesn't hold on to her baby. Because she's jumping from one tree to the next, she needs both the hands. So baby monkeys, they just hold to the mother. You ever seen a baby monkey? They hold on to their mother. So that's like the philosophy that we have to do everything. We don't need any special mercy. We just do the sadhana and accordingly we'll get our blessing. But the actual philosophy is like rope in the well philosophy. It's like if we fall into a well and we can't get out, we need someone to throw us a rope, to pull us out of the well. Then when the rope is thrown, we also have to hold on the rope. Both from our side we should hold on the rope, and from the other side they should be pulling us out. Both the cooperation is needed. This is the actual process of Krishna consciousness. From our side we do whatever we can. We do our sadhana, we do our devotional service, we serve the Guru and Vaishnavas, serve the deities. We try to do. Even if we are not able, still we try. Just for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. And the other side, we are always hoping upon hope for Krishna's mercy. So like someone falling in the well, Krishna is pulling us out. Krishna is pulling us from this ocean of birth and death. So we also need His mercy. Just on our own effort, we can't get out. So this combination is the actual process of Krishna consciousness. It's a middle way. It's neither kitten nor monkey. It's a well in the rope in the well. Combination of the devotee's desire and the Lord's mercy, both are needed. So that means that as devotees, we have to also try our level best to do devotional service. At the same time, we never think that that's enough. We always are depending on the mercy of Krishna to actually complete our Krishna consciousness. So, it's a rare human life, and with this human life, if we take this mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, then we can achieve the highest perfection. As Krishna said in this verse, He attains my spiritual nature. Simply by seeing how the modes of nature are working and knowing the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to the modes of nature. Why we can take shelter of Krishna? Because He's above Maya. So He is solid. This Maya is changing all the time. But Krishna is solid. So we can always take the shelter of Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna.